everybody, and welcome back to Critically Reclaimed, a podcast. My name is William Bibbiani. I'm a critic. Everybody calls me Bibbs.
My name is Whitney Seibold. I am a podcast.
And this right here, this is a podcast where we podcast.
This is
why don't you explain the podcast?
Okay, no problem. This is our podcast that was inspired by, of all things, the time we were locked down, and we had a lot of extra time on our hands, and we decided to sort of explore all of the streaming services that were available to us at the time. William and I don't have perfect film educations. We haven't seen everything, so we wanted to go back and catch up on some of the old classics. So we're going through on this podcast, streaming service by streaming service, selecting a film that either one or both of us hasn't seen, and watching it and talking about it as a means of educating ourselves, catching up, and sharing with you.
And this is entirely interactive over at our Patreon. That's patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork. For every episode of Critically Reclaimed, our patrons get to decide what we're going to review. We pick a streaming service. We pick usually a theme or a genre or a filmmaker. And we pick four films. Our Patreon subscribers pick one of those films. And this time we decided to focus on the queer film offerings over at the Criterion channel, of which there is actually no shortage, just a lot of interesting stuff over there. Mm-hmm. And the winner was a documentary, a very important documentary, that I had never seen. Whitney, had you ever actually had a chance to sit down and watch this?
No.
Oh, cool. So we get to both discover this for the very first time.
This was a big hole in my queer education, just because I've heard so much about it since it came out in 1990. I understand that this movie was a bit of a flashpoint for what is now just a really common subgenre on cable TV, and that's the drag show. And it all kind of sprung from this kind of, you might call it an underground movement in New York back in the 80s. And a lot of the lingo that we use in association with drag, a lot of queer slang first was brought into the public eye by this film, and it was, I feel like I'm, like my education is a little bit more complete now. I've like linked up a lot of different pieces now, finally having seen it. William, what film is it?
Yes, it is Paris is Burning.
You have space to do all that you intend to.
This movie is about the ball circuit.
A competition amongst gay people under one roof.
It's like crossing into the looking glass.
How? Their families. Kids with broken homes or no home at all.
My name is Angie Extravaganza, and I am the mother of the House of Extravaganza.
I'm Willie Ninja, the mother of the House of Ninja.
Ninjas hit hard, they hit fast. We come out to assassinate.
I am Pepper LaBeija, the legendary mother of the House of LaBeija, and I've been around for 2 decades.
So, Paris is Burning is a documentary by Jenny Livingston, which, as Whitney said, focuses on the drag scene in New York City in the late 1980s. Drag did not start in the 1980s. Drag had been going on as a theatrical tradition for as long as we've had theater. But the modern version of a drag show has become indelibly linked with the queer community and has become a very potent art form in and of itself, with a lot of really incredible personalities and performers attached to it. And although Paris is Burning obviously did not invent anything, it brought a lot of the drag scene to light, which has, over time, become very commonplace and led to TV shows like RuPaul's Drag Race.
And
as you mentioned, a lot of lingo that we use today very casually.
Mm-hmm.
I'm totally with you on this. Having seen this documentary, I'm like, oh my God, I understand so much now. Not just about like the drag scene, which is so much more, just so much more opened up for me. But also just about, when you see this movie, its influence is unmistakable on so many things that followed, some obvious, some not.
Yeah, well, and a lot of, slang that we just sort of use casually in everyday conversation came out of this. It's not just the stuff linked to, like, RuPaul's Drag Race and all the rest. I'm actually unfamiliar with all of those drag game shows that you find on cable TV now. I don't watch any of those shows. Dragula is one I've been meaning to catch up on. But the notion of the drag show as we see it today is, it's sort of like, it plays like a fashion competition. You make outfits, you sort of follow themes, you design makeup, and then you have sort of like a walk down a runway, like it's a fashion show. And
well, that's one key way of doing it. And I want to make it abundantly clear here, neither Whitney nor I know people who do drag, but I do not do drag.
I am not
an expert in drag, and I'm not going to pretend to be. So we're going to go a lot off of what we've seen in the documentary and what we may know, but it is incomplete. And if anyone wants to write in and share their thoughts if they have more expertise than us, we'll invite you to right now. We'll do it at the end of the episode as well. But our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net, so feel free to do so. But
my closest sort of relationship, I guess, and this is kind of where my experience comes in, Rocky Horror is born out of this scene as well. Now, the Rocky Horror Picture Show came out in 1975, and the cults really kind of started coming together, I think, around the time these kinds of, they're called, like, walk shows, they're called balls. Mm. They call them balls.
And, yes. In these balls, in the movie, they're the ones that we go to are balls, yeah.
Yeah, and,
Like a fancy Cinderella type ball. That's that reference. Yeah.
The Cinderella type ball, but they also meet it in sort of like a cheeky kind of way as well. They actually, the way they say balls in certain scenes is meant to be a double entendre. Mm. But Rocky Horror is a drag movie. It's about Dr. Frankenfurter, who's a transsexual from a transvestite from transsexual Transylvania. And a lot of the showiness that ended up becoming associated with Rocky Horror, the live shows, were definitely, definitely born of the same impulse that brought upon these balls in New York. From what I understand about Rocky Horror, it was, as we know it today, it's an English film, it opened in England, it did open across the country, but the cults, from what I understand, and this could be kind of wrong, was that it's a West Coast phenomenon, that it came about here in Los Angeles in sort of Southern California theaters and then kind of spread throughout the
country. As a midnight show, you mean?
That is, as a ball unto itself.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking to Rocky Horror, and I'm thinking about the different categories of ball that were on display in there, because what Paris is Burning points out is that in these shows, they're actually like they're like different like categories, different assignments that the performers can enact in. There's not just drag. Some of them dress in like military uniforms, and they are judged at how well they can quote pass as an actual officer. There's a couple.
Yeah, one of the terms that is used a lot in drag, and if you ever watched Drag Race, which I have seen, I'm not up to date on it, but I've seen a lot of it. One of the terms that's used a lot is realness, which is a compliment, and it is indeed something that I think nowadays has a little bit more to do with sort of a performance sincerity. But to hear Paris is Burning tell it, and again, this movie came out over 30 years ago, and definitions of words evolve over time. But in this movie, it is specifically said that realness refers to your ability as a queer person to pass for not queer. So while some of the drag that we see here is very, very much in the we will dress as a gender with which we do not identify, and we will do so in an exaggerated or satirical way. There are some who will also perform it in a very literal, very realistic way. That's just two specific types of drag that one can do. But you're right, there's so many, like, weirdly hyper-specific in some cases. There's one where it is... They do a whole, like, run of it. Like, okay, so it's a winter beach wear was, like, one. And then another one was Butch Lesbians Doing Their First Drag Show. that was the theme.
Like, you and have to dress as a butch lesbian as if they were doing their first drag show.
Yeah, so it's a very specific look that you are trying to create. And we see, over the course of this, that how, like, empowering this is, how much of a community this is. And we also see just how seriously it gets taken, such as when someone is accused in the middle of their walk, in the middle of their show, of their jacket being a woman's jacket. And like, okay, well, that would disqualify you. And they're like, oh my God, I can prove it. The buttons are on the correct side. And like, it becomes a whole thing. And
it's very strict. Yeah. And that's another thing that reminded me of my experiences with Rocky Horror, because there are so many like little details that the cast chooses to focus on. Their costumes have to be really, really screen specific. For instance, if you have like the wrong color corset, then you are required to get a better one. You have to pay attention to a lot of these little details. And yeah, I really appreciated that this wasn't just like a party. This was a hyper-structured thing that became its own scene. And part of it was about creativity. It was about trying to assemble something with very exacting rules. Part of it was about just having fun. In fact, one of the walks, I think people just walk around completely in the nude. That was just for fun. You're just walking around naked. But more than anything, it is this free environment where people are permitted without, not even without judgment, with enthusiasm, are encouraged to explore gender expression. Before words like transsexual was a word that was a little bit more commonly used back when this film was named. Now we say transgender. Transgender wasn't in common parlance until relatively recently. But there are a lot of people who are just sort of spanning the gender spectrum in this one. There are some cisgendered gay men who do this, but there are also some trans men who are doing this, and also some trans women who are doing this. And they explore just vast network of camaraderie that arises from this activity, and how there's, of course, a lot of resentment, and there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of desperation underlining a lot of this, because a lot of these people were kicked out of their homes for being queer. That's actually addressed very directly. The characters that I found myself looking at the most are these two 13-year-olds they find who are living on the street because they were just recently kicked out of their homes. And they're trying to be as positive as possible, but you can see that there's actually a lot of sadness to their lives. They didn't want to be kicked out, for God's sake. And so the movie kind of expands from these balls out into the queer community in this neighborhood in New York at the time, and what it was like to deal with extreme poverty, what it was like to deal with homophobia, talking about AIDS at a time when the crisis was still in full swing, and of course some of the violence that some of these people suffer. And in fact, one of the people interviewed, a person named Venus Extravaganza, was found murdered during the course of the movie. And
yeah, and they're like a main character. They're one of the people we follow the most throughout the movie, and it's just shocking to just all of a sudden they're not with us anymore.
Yeah, and
you hear some of the details, and it's just tragic and terrifying.
And it's heartrending how matter-of-factly Venus's friends have to talk about them, because this is something that kind of happens a lot in this community, just because of the hate and the fear and the poverty that they're constantly dealing with. So there's a lot of serious issues that it's dealing with, but it always comes back to the balls themselves, and the balls are actually presented very fun and very open.
Well, they're not just fun and they're open, they're community. And this is something that I think cannot be underlined enough. When it comes to Paris is Burning, which is as frank a discussion we can have about all of the negativity. These are people who, and I mean specifically the people we meet in the movie, they have found a community. And indeed, within their community, there are sub-communities. Various different drag performers are part of various houses, which honestly, like, all sound like... And I, watching this movie, this is something I did not expect. Watching this movie, I realize now where Step Up 3D came from.
Well, the whole idea of a dance crew is kind of comes out of this, mm-hmm. doesn't it?
Well, there's that, but even more specific ways. So if you know Whitney and I, you know we love the Step Up movies, and in particular Step Up 3D, which is the one that takes place in New York City, which is about a group of outcasts who were kicked out of their home for, quote, dancing. At the beginning of the movie, we get a series of interviews with all of them in a very similar way to what we see in Paris is Burning. We find out that various dance crews are now belong to a series of houses, very specifically like the kind of houses that we have in Paris is Burning. People who all dress up thematically. There's a house in Paris is Burning called the House of Ninja. And in Step Up 3D, there is the House of Samurai. I don't think this is a coincidence. I think they were very specifically name-checking it. And just to see that, like, surprise... like, because that's one of my favorite movies, and all of a sudden I'm watching this thing, I'm like, I didn't fully understand one of my favorite movies until just now. So, but what Paris is Burning has, and which is why I think films like that would want to emulate it, is this absolute sense of family and community that comes out of it. Every house has a house mother. And this is one particular person, one particular drag performer, who, you know, informally, is responsible for their entire crew. And they talk about how these are people, many of whom have been rejected from their family unit. They are looking for not just family, they are looking for matriarchs or patriarchs. They're looking for people to look to for some kind of familial acceptance and guidance. Mm. And this is a role they are filling, because this is a film very much about found family.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's something you can understand whether or not you are actively part of the queer community.
Yeah.
And that's something that is one of the many, many, many things about this movie that is incredibly potent and just absolutely vibrant.
Yeah, yeah. The community, and also... The defiance involved, that's something I kind of was keying into. I love that everybody was sort of being drawn together to what is essentially mock the cishet world. I felt like a lot of these performances were out and out satire. And indeed, if you look to drag shows today, you look at, you know, a drag queen, and they're not trying to invent makeup or wigs to the way a woman would look. They're sort of exaggerating it. It's sort of like this cartoony version.
Well, that of that, again, there are many different forms of drag, and well, some people are indeed attempting for, quote, realness. But the more common version that we see is indeed a more exaggerated version. And yes, it is. It is satirical about the, well, let's be honest here, the cishet world, which controls a lot of not just the culture, but the systems in which we live.
Yeah, the
so breaking that down and satirizing that is incredibly powerful.
Yeah, I was really struck by that. You know, we're going to these drag balls, and there's people wearing these really wild gowns, and people are spend, you know, hours on their makeup, and then there are just some people in military uniforms, and it took me a second to really see that. Wait a minute, this is camp. They're trying to mock like the exactitude of militariness, of being militant. When you sort of expand,
and it's also worth remembering that this comes from a time when gays were not openly allowed in the military.
That's right. That's right. And so what they're doing
to be
is...
queer and in the military was verboten. So that is a very potent statement, to dress in military garb.
So what they're doing is they're making these balls are like actual legit fashion shows, but at the same time, they're kind of a satire of this middle American notion of judging a woman by her looks and putting a... because beauty pageants are just a really horrendous institution. They're incredibly sexist. They always have been. Mm-hmm. And that they persist is incredibly frustrating.
They enforce a weird level a very strict and very specific standard of beauty, which is bad even just in the abstract, but in practice it's just unwholesome. Yeah. Like it's really creepy, and it's really weird that we live in a world where there are people who are totally okay with these kinds of beauty pageants and yet are critiquing and indeed wildly misinterpreting and demonizing drag shows, which are actually about individual expression in a much more potent way and actually are works of complex art.
Well, I think the issue is what a drag show is satirizing is the person who is objecting to it. I don't want a beauty pageant to be mocked. Which is, I think, kind of at its heart, what a drag show, what these balls were all about. They're looking at the cishet world, cishet white world, in fact, and sending it up, trying to have a beauty pageant of their own, where they get to sort of declare their own standards of beauty, and how liberating that is, not just in finding their own beauty, but also in a great way to raise a very defiant middle finger to this system that is callously rejecting them.
And there's something you said just there that I think is vitally important as we talk about how a lot of the works of drag are works of satire and of subversive artistic expression, is that even though there is sometimes an attempt again to... take on the appearance of accurate cishet presentation. There is also, again, as you said, these are still beauty pageants. They're just not judged on the same level. Everyone here is allowed to feel beautiful and indeed encouraged to. In ways that in a lot of the mainstream culture would not be permitted or would not be accepted or would be mocked or worse. The absolute wide range of people and body types and just to see all of them celebrated and appreciated. And there's a great speech someone has where they're talking about how, like, because again, these shows are judged and sometimes very harshly, but they do talk about how everyone who goes up there is doing something brave, and everyone who goes up there gets applause.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone deserves applause. You even if you read them to filth afterwards, they put themselves out there, and that deserves respect and appreciation. And I think that's something that is very significantly in the film, because there's also a significant amount of the film that is about reading people, which is a term I actually didn't know until I saw RuPaul's Drag Race, but you know, comes from this culture, which is basically just an elaborate system of verbally exploiting and pummeling people for perceived faults, some of which stems from being mocked by cishet people for being queer.
Yeah, yeah.
However, when you're doing it with another person who is queer, you know, when your opponent isn't, you know, when a cishet person is mocking you for being queer, all they can really say is you're queer.
Yeah.
And so you have so much more material, but when you're both queer, okay, well, we can't use that. So it gets more and more specific, and that's when we start getting into more competitive forms of drag that we see in Paris is Burning, and that evolves into more physical expressions of competitiveness, which evolves very directly into the creation of one of the biggest dance crazes of the late 80s, early 90s, and that's the Vogue.
Yeah, voguing. Yeah, yeah.
Which was popularized in the mainstream by Madonna, who saw it happening in this community and decided to bring it into the mainstream.
Oh, she co-opted it? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Let's be fair here. She co-opted it, but she did invite. I don't think she ever claimed Gene.
No. Actually, Madonna herself is queer, and she had.
Yeah.
A queer scene that she was a big part of. So, no, she was no poser.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, maybe a little, but like, I it's not quite the same.
Yeah.
But in any case, Madonna, anytime something that is on the fringe or the counterculture becomes mainstream, it usually is introduced to the mainstream by someone with a lot less to lose.
Yeah, yeah.
Than the people in the counterculture who are doing it on the fringe. So Madonna helped popularize that, but to see it done for real. And if you're not familiar with the Vogue, this is audio. I can't do it. I couldn't do it even if I could. But it is a dance style that is basically created through a series of specific poses. It's not constant fluid motion. It is actually stopping to pose in sometimes very inorganic ways that are very striking, and then moving into another pose in a fluid way, and then holding it for a moment, and it is really quite impressive to see, especially some of the people here who invented it.
Yeah, it was...
just how versatile it can be.
Voguing came from model poses, and they say as much in this documentary, but what I saw a lot of, they're moving in such a way, it actually reminded me a lot of the choreography of Bob Fosse, just that kind of very angular...
Oh, yeah.
Pose-to-pose kind of dance, and I think it's pretty cool that... near the end of the movie, they put some footage from a news report on voguing and on balls, and they actually interview a couple celebrities, including Gwen Verdon. She's there as well.
Yeah. Who thinks it's amazing? They're very supportive of it, and that's very cool. So that's just neat.
Yeah.
There's a couple of people in Paris is Burning who had... very odd stories that go beyond the film. We mentioned in particular the tragedy of Venus Extravaganza, who is just an absolutely fascinating person. Mm-hmm. And they seem so... They seem primed for stardom. They seem primed for stardom. Mm-hmm. They've got every element of star quality you could want in someone who wants the world and could very easily get it, and then they were horrifically murdered. There is another member of the documentary cast, if you will, and I want to make sure I get their name right, because I would hate to do it wrong. And it is Dorian Corey.
Oh yeah,
Dorian Corey.
Very interesting person. I love Dorian. Well, Dorian Corey is a little bit older than some of the other performers.
Yeah.
And has sort of reached like this elder statesperson phase where there's a great quote from Dorian Corey where they say, as you get older, you aim lower in terms of like, they're talking about like, what do you want to be? Do you want to look forward to like stardom and actual fame? Do you think these balls can actually bring you into sort of like mainstream fame? And Dorian Corey says, well, I wanted to, but I'm a little older now, and you aim lower. If you make a little bit of a mark and you have fun doing it, you're okay, which is like a very, as somebody in their mid-40s, it's like I kind of heard that a little bit. When you're in your 20s, but there's no time. Like you're desperate to fill the time. And when you're a little bit older, you can kind of slow down and take your time a little bit more.
And listen, they're fantastically interesting, and they say some of the most potent things in this documentary. And when they died,
just recently,
they died of AIDS complications. No, that was not. It was in 1993.
Oh,
I think it was someone else. Dorian Corey died in 1993.
One of the stars of this film, died like kind of recently.
Yeah, it wasn't Dorian Corey, but when Dorian Corey died. They found the preserved dead body of someone who had been murdered in their stuff.
Yeah,
like amongst their belongings. And that's really weird. And if you've watched the show Pose, which I actually haven't seen, I hear it's really good. Jenny Livingston, who directed this film, was involved as the producer on it, and it's very much inspired by this exact scene and many of the people in this movie. There is a character who I think accidentally kills someone and decides to like just keep them like they're in their apartment. And apparently this is where that story came from.
Wow.
No one knows the full details of it, but apparently they'd been in there for decades. Oof. Really weird. Really, really weird story. Holy crap. So, this is one of those really interesting documentaries where it's a snapshot of a specific time and a specific place, but we're capturing images of people who had lives and legends and artistic influences that expand way beyond this movie. This is just, if you were there at the New York drag scene in like 1988 or 87 or whenever this film was being produced, they just happened to be there, but then they spread out and they had so much more, so many other adventures, some really sad and some very inspiring.
Well, some had adventures, but something that struck me, that might strike you, was how some of them really had very modest dreams, and how there were a lot of these young trans women who talked about their dream of just sort of like relatively dull suburban domestic existence. They just talked about, I just want to get married in a white dress to a kind, boring man and live in a small home in the suburbs. And that's what they were really, really, like, latching on to. They had fallen into this scene and they had found sort of a community, but you could see that even though they're kind of mocking this world that had rejected them, they really longed to go into it in a way that their gender expression would eventually allow. And, you know, here in 2020, we're still, 30 years later, we're still not there. I guess this was 1990, so,
When the movie came out, but it had been produced for a while,
So, Well, you're talking about sort of latching on to sort of having these big grand adventures, but I think what this film is really good is actually giving us various perspectives. It wasn't just people who are out looking for adventures or looking for fame or trying to ascend into this, like, higher realm of being admired. It was also about these people who just really longed for what they even described as kind of a boring life, and how that they were denied something so simple gives it this film a little bit of a tragic undercurrent as well.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting to see this film. You mentioned some of the trans women in the movie are they speak about how they actually, some of them have surgery and actually are able to transition completely, and we interview a few of the performers, not all of whom are trans, but some of them are, or have thought about it, and some of them have said, like, you know, I've thought about it, but, you know, it seemed like too heavy a transition, and it might not be easier to be a woman in society, and you can just tell that there is a lot of internalized, you know, doubt and maybe even transphobia. And then there's this one performer, and I forget their name, but they're interviewed on a beach, and they talk about how, you know, they transitioned, and they are a woman. And, of course, they were before, but, you know, physically, they are a woman. And the absolute sigh of absolute liberation when they just get to talk about how, and I feel like me, and I am exactly who I want to be, and I feel beautiful, and then they're just running on the beach, and they just feel alive and free, and it's just really glorious to watch. It's I don't know if I have ever felt that that level of joy in my life, and it's absolutely a riveting, and it's astounding that there is a film like Paris is Burning out there, and there is still so much absolute willful ignorance about trans people and the drag movement. And trans people have been demonized significantly in the media as we are recording this very recently. There have been a lot of legislation trying to stop even just drag shows, as though drag itself was inherently sexualized. And there's almost nothing in this whole documentary that is attempting to run the gamut of the drag experience and the drag art and the drag art form. And granted, it's older, but still, it's extensive.
Yeah.
Almost none of the performance, almost none of the show is sexual in nature. It is about gender identity, but it is not about sex.
It's not about...
At least not...
There's no, like... Yeah, there's no flirting or, like, hooking up going on. At least not that's covered by the documentary. Maybe it was. They do talk...
Not in a way that seems relevant to the actual performance. I'm sure people are, like, meeting each other, but, like, it's not... That's not what the performance is about.
Mm.
And that's really important. Because it's a lot of the controversy, or the so-called controversy over this, is based on just a simple, fundamental misunderstanding of the text.
Mm.
That is obviously willful, intentional, and frankly hateful ignorance. And again, you watch a documentary like this and you hear all of the absolute stupid, cruel propaganda that is being put out by people who just...
Well, it's
it makes you want to weep, but you see all the joy here as well, and you see how many people are actually like finding absolute like freedom and artistic liberation through this. And how can you possibly be mad?
Yeah.
There's nothing negative about it. It's great.
It's great. Look, you use the word ignorance. These are, you know, a lot of the accusations and the pillorying and the just the attacks that come from people who want to censor drag and sexuality don't understand it. They don't want to learn about it because that's work. A lot of the ethos they're coming from is if it's too hard, then you need to ignore it. Everything should be easy, including
or hate it,
hate it, ignore it, reject it outright because it's too much work to think about it, to learn, to grow as a person.
Mm-hmm.
That takes too much of my time and effort, so I'll just reject it and reject it all. So, it's infuriating, but at the same time, it's kind of pathetic. It's pathetic because it clearly, yeah, very clearly is based on people who are just not even bothering to learn anything.
Yeah, and yet they wield and way too much power, which again is a lot of what, as we see in Paris is Burning, drag exists to do. It exists to subvert our ideas of power and heteronormative culture. And I'm so exceptionally glad that I saw this documentary. I hope other people who listen to Critically Reclaimed and our other podcasts, because we knew this one was coming, we mentioned it in our Patreon page, I hope you take an opportunity to check it out. It's a rather short documentary. It's less than an hour and a half. But it is dense, and it feels absolutely like it's covering the material in a rich way. You meet a lot of different people in the community. It's a very exciting snapshot of a very particular moment when the culture was breaking out.
Mm.
And it feels like when you see this, you realize like how... It feels like a missing piece of the puzzle. And all of a sudden, you understand why there was a massive shift in a lot of popular culture in the late 80s and the 90s, and even affecting in a very significant way the mainstream.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's fucking great. I'm so glad I saw this damn movie.
Yeah, I had already
connected it.
I had connected it through, like I said earlier, I had connected it through my experience with the Rocky Horror Picture Show, but...
Yeah.
The Rocky Horror Picture Show only goes back so far, and this it actually connected to a much larger community that I didn't sort of put together the origins of until I saw this film. I feel better that I have seen this. I know that when this movie came out, it itself was also pilloried by some people on the homophobes on the extreme right. Because it was getting funding from the National Endowment of the Arts. That used to be a thing. Arts used to get federal funding, like a lot of it. It was really cool. That kind of doesn't happen so much anymore. Like, it's still out there, but it was because...
It's not the force it used to be, yeah.
No, but the NEA got into some hot water because... I'm not sure if you've ever seen Robert Mapplethorpe photographs, but Robert Mapplethorpe was a queer photographer who took incredibly sexual images, not just nudes, but men engaged in sexual activity. But, very artful, very textured, lent a lot of like viscerality to, you know, human skin. Like you could actually feel what it would in your hand, like what it would feel like to grab that. And because it was so aggressively queer and aggressively sexual, and it was partially funded by the government, a lot of Republican senators all of a sudden were up in arms. We can't have the government funding this smut. It's like, okay, don't show it to kids, but it is art. And this was kind of fallout from a lot of that, a lot of the anger over Robert Mapplethorpe and other artists as well. It wasn't just Robert Mapplethorpe. This film was brought up in a few conversations about how government arts funding was going to the wrong place. And I don't see, and you can tell that the people who complain about this movie haven't seen this movie, because to your point, William, it's not about fucking. It's not about having sex. It's about this community. It's actually really kind of beautiful. I will defend Robert Mapplethorpe. Some people might not like his work, but I think it is.
I'm actually unfamiliar with his work. I can't say one way or another.
I'd say look up his pictures. Just don't do it at work, because they really are aggressively sexual. This was a film that was actually meant to talk to people and show a lot of humanity and reality. It is a documentary film, and that it was just sort of dismissed as queer smut is pretty gross. It was really highly acclaimed when it came out, but it didn't get any like Oscar nominations, and I seem to vaguely remember a scandal that I couldn't tell you any details about because I was a kid when it came out, but I remember like people talking about, oh, Paris is Burning didn't get a nomination. It's like, what's that? I didn't know until now.
Yeah, the documentary and the International Cinema Academy Awards have long been very difficult to decipher. Oftentimes, many of the best and most celebrated documentaries or international films of any given year don't even make a short list, because those are often selected by committees rather than the larger voting block, because there are so many and it's very difficult to keep track of them all, unless it is specifically your job to do so. But then they end up having the weirdest damn taste sometimes. But in any case, Paris is Burning, again, Whitney and I, Whitney is bisexual, I am myself am graysexual, but neither of us are drag performers, and neither of us are part of this particular scene. So while we respect and appreciate and feel absolutely warmed over, like just absolutely aglow watching this movie, this is not our field of expertise. And if anyone listening, I mentioned it at the top, just so you knew it, we weren't trying to speak out of school, if anyone listening is part of the drag community or has very specific information they can share or want to share about anything that's in Paris is Burning in particular, again, we highly encourage you to watch it. It's available on the Criterion Collection. I think it might be on HBO Max as well.
A lot of the Criterion films also like sort of cross-pollinate with HBO Max. So
there's a lot of overlap, but it's not a guarantee. Check before you assume it is. Or if you just want to talk about anything we discussed in general, we would love to hear from you. Our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. We might read your email in an upcoming episode of We've Got Mail. Whitney, what is our P.O. Box?
Yeah, send us an actual physical letter. Send it to the Critically Acclaimed Network, P.O. Box 641565, Los Angeles, California, 90064.
And on the next episode of Critically Reclaimed, we're going back to one of our favorite streaming services. It's Shudder. A horror-themed streaming service with a lot of really, really great material. And we thought we'd keep the theme going. They also have a great queer section for Pride Month and beyond. And so the options are all coming from that particular section. And the options are thus. Butcher Baker Nightmare Maker, which I believe was an early 80s slasher film. I don't know a lot about a lot of these. Mary, Mary, Bloody Mary. Also a 70s, 80s slasher. Knife Plus Heart is a relatively recent giallo throwback, focusing on the queerness of the genre.
I think it's like 2017. It's just a few years old.
Yeah, relatively recent, but I missed it, and it got a lot of buzz. So, and then lastly, the film Tammy and the T-Rex, starring Paul Walker as a teenager whose brain is implanted in the body of an animatronic T-Rex and tries to reunite with his girlfriend Denise Richards. That's a real film.
It's a rather notorious one, and one of us hasn't seen it. So, I want you to look over all of your options when you're voting in this poll.
Yeah, don't just go for the one with the weirdest logline. Really think it out.
It's weird. Look at all four. Follow your heart. If it really seems like it's going to be the weird one, then go ahead and vote your heart. But don't just dive for it, because we understand it's really tempting.
Yeah, don't think it out. Like, it's we put all four on here for a reason, because I think any one of them would make for a great episode of Critically Reclaimed. Anyway, you can vote over at patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork. Even $1 a month, you get to vote for future episodes of Critically Reclaimed. But if you're at the higher tiers, we also have a lot of other exclusive shows, including Only the Best, where we review every single film ever nominated for Best Picture, All Our Yesterdays, where we review every single episode of Star Trek in order. We also do trivia nights, hangouts, commentary tracks. There's a lot available over at our Patreon. Thank you to every one of our patrons for selecting Paris is Burning. You great taste. Yeah, great taste. Thank you so much for this. And, of course, thank you for keeping this show and all of our other shows here at the Critically Acclaimed Network afloat. If you can't afford to be a patron, we totally get it. But if you want to help the show, please subscribe and leave us a review wherever you find the show. It really helps other people find the program and gives us an opportunity to grow, which we would very much love to do. So I guess that's about it. You can find us on Twitter at Critically... Sorry, they don't... It was too long for Twitter, so we had to put at Critic Acclaim. Whatever. I'm at William Bibbiani.
I'm at Whitney Seibel.
Yes, he is. And until next time, this was the podcast you listened to. Goodbye.